Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. You know, I asked AI this morning to just summarize Rob Nadelson's career. Give me a summarized biography for Rob Nadelson, our special guest today. That was about 8:15 this morning. It's still thinking. It's still trying to come up with that. A lot of things that Professor Nadelson has done and is still involved in as well. And I'm thankful for that because courts are really hard to understand. In Montana, we're looking at trying to get some judicial reform. What does that mean nationally? We've got some cases, Trump versus Slaughter, the future of independent agencies. Want to talk about that. There is a new series that's coming out as well that I think you'll want to keep in touch with. It's preparing for Montana's 2030 vote on a state constitutional convention. Ton of things as well. The Article 5 amendment process. It'll be a pleasure today to talk with the original host of Voices of Montana, Rob Nadelson, today.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. You can call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. And now here's your host, the most recent host, Mr. Tom Schultz.
Yeah, at least for today, right? And then we'll see how that plays out. Speaking of playing out, there's some play-by-play that we'll get from Rob Nadelson. We talk about what's going on right now in the U.S. Supreme Court. I think that's a pretty significant case, Trump versus Slaughter. Has some really good thoughts on that as well. But as I mentioned, a ton of stuff to go over and still writing that biography. There's lights flickering in Zambia because AI is working on your biography, Rob. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I think AI is either burping or maybe is trying to come up with a single derogatory word. Just so that listeners know, I was a law professor at the University of Montana for many years. I taught constitutional law and a number of other subjects. And Tom Schultz and I go back a long way. We worked together on the first statewide radio show back in 1998, 1999. It's been a long time. So I'm really pleased to be back with you.
Oh, and I credit you for helping me understand a lot of things. What I did was what Cody does for me here, and that's like engineer. But we had a lot of opportunity to talk as people called in, and I learned a ton, and I appreciate that as well. It really got me to be diligent in what it is that I accepted as fact or accurate in my life, too, among other things, too. So thank you for that. Yeah, that's why I call you the professor. But again, the history goes back for quite a ways. You ran in Montana. I called you a rabble-rouser, and you disputed that term. But many...
Well, you weren't the only one. Right? that was one of the kinder terms.
Well, and you created a movement in Montana. I don't remember the name of it right now. That group
it was called Montanans for Better Government.
Yes, thank
and
you.
It really was the canary in the coal mine, so to speak. Although it didn't die, it survived. It grew into it transformed Montana in many ways. I mean, when we started working in the 1990s, Montana had the highest personal income tax in the country, with no break for capital gains whatsoever. The state was suffering economically. I mean, old-timers may remember that period. It was not pleasant. The story was that Montana's most valuable export were her young people. People were leaving the state constantly for more opportunity. And I think one of the reasons that's been largely turned around is the movement we started with then. Of course, we took a lot of flack because we were ahead of our time. But it was worth it, ultimately. It really was.
Yeah, I think it woke a lot of people up. I mean, we started questioning what we were hearing and the standard operational practice of government, so to speak. And that does continue today.
And Tom, that's what was so important about having a statewide radio show. Because what was going on in those days was that you had people in Billings who had no way of talking to people in Kalispell. And, you know, people in Glendive having no way to talk to people in Butte, at least not on a regular basis. And so what was really the group that really controlled things were people in Helena. Not all people in Helena, but those who were wired in. And the rest of the state was largely without reliable information, without reliable input. The press, unfortunately, was no help. And I think statewide talk radio is also a large part of what changed that.
And that's so, you know, where it's at nowadays plays such a vital role. You know, we're going to talk about that, you know, so-called fourth branch of government, which is, as you noted, in one of these cases here. And we'll talk more about what you're doing as well. But that fourth branch of government was not an overly friendly branch of government. And so things have changed in that regard, and they still need to move on. I'm going to move on here to Senior Fellow in Constitutional Jurisprudence from the Independence Institute, still running the Article 5 Information Center there. You're also a Senior Fellow now at the Montana Policy Institute, and that's another regional, nonpartisan research organization that focuses on markets and government accountability.
Actually, I used to be Senior Fellow at the Montana Policy Institute, but unfortunately, that did not survive. So I recently signed on with the Mountain States Policy Center.
My fault. Yeah, that's what I meant to
say. Mountain States Policy Center is actually based in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, but they cover four different states, and one of them is Montana. They're fairly new on the scene, but they're already making a major impression, and I was very impressed with them and decided to sign up. So I'll be working, I am already working on Montana policy for the Mountain States Policy Center, with a focus, as you would imagine, on the Constitution and on the judicial system, although I'm not necessarily limited to that.
MountainStatesPolicy.org for more information there, too. And also, you can keep up with Rob Nadelson and with Professor Nadelson at NadelsonRob.com. That's new, and that's a new collection of a lot of your writings.
Yeah. NadelsonRob.com is it brings together everything I've written. And so all of the blackmailable material is there, Tom.
Well, if there was blackmail ability there, the National Review and the New York Post would have found that out. But, you know, cited in those national organizations, I read this morning an Epic Times article. So very active, Rob. Thank you. Let's get into these issues. And I'm gonna leave it up to you to where to start. Maybe we start with what you're doing for the Mountain States Policy Center.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I wrote my first article for the Mountain States Policy Center, which, by the way, was reprinted by at least four major Montana newspapers, talked about a recent case that reestablished what we already knew, and that was that the Convention of States procedure for proposing U.S. constitutional amendments is perfectly usable and the rules are perfectly clear. But more recently, I've written another article, and again, it appears on the Mountain States Policy Center webpage, but it also has been picked up by at least three major newspapers, to begin a discussion in Montana about do Montanans have a new constitutional convention at the state level in 2030? Montanans are going to be voting on that issue. Whether or not they want a new constitutional convention. They voted twice. The first time they voted overwhelmingly no because the Constitution was still pretty new. It was 1972 it was adopted. And then subsequently in 1996, they voted, Montanans voted no again, but by a much smaller margin. So people were beginning to think, you know, maybe there are things about this Constitution we want to reconsider. After all, it's been amended 38 times, for crying out loud, 38 times in 53 years. So I think 2030 is a good time to renew that. Montanans are going to be voting on that anyway. We might as well begin the discussion, and we might as well begin the discussion by acknowledging what many people don't acknowledge, and that is that there are significant problems with the 1972 Constitution.
Yeah, please
go
into that.
So my series of articles is going to be exploring some of those problems. I summarize them in the current article on the Mountain States Policy Center website. I've got one in the queue that then focuses on an example of such a problem, and that is how the Constitution handles or mishandles the powers of the Board of Regents.
Go into that more, because we've had a discussion about it as well, and the ratification process, as I recall, you felt was legally flawed, and the document, and a lot of people would agree, ambiguous in some areas, contradictory, and has been misinterpreted.
There are a number of different problems. One is, and I don't know if we want to discuss this today, I think we've mentioned it in the past, there are real questions as to whether the 72 Constitution was that ever properly ratified. But let's put that aside, mm-hmm. unless callers have questions on it. What I did is I focused on the treatment of the Board of Regents in the Constitution as an example of vagueness, ambiguity, contradiction. You've got one provision which says that the regents have full power over the university system. And so the position of the regents is, hey, we're a fourth branch of government. We can do anything we like. If the legislature says that shoplifting is a felony, we can say that shoplifting on the campus is only a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. Well, the Montana Supreme Court has rejected that extreme position. But the court has remained perplexed by other parts. I mean, you've got, for example, the Constitution says there's only three branches of government, not four, legislative, executive, and judicial. And then when it lists the executive departments, it doesn't mention the regents. It grants all legislative power to the legislature, none to the regents. It grants all judicial power to the courts, none to the regents. And so you've got, on one side, the Constitution says the regents have full power, that's the phrase, over the university system. But then on the other side, you've got all these other sections which seem to indicate it doesn't have any. And then you've got a section immediately before the full power section, which assigns key duties, including budgeting responsibilities, not to the regents, but to the State Board of Education. So the result of this is that nobody really knows where the power of the regents over the university system begins and where it ends. And there have been recurrent lawsuits on the issue. I don't think that the Montana Supreme Court has struggled with it. I don't think they've always gotten it right. But it's a good example of the kind of problem that we see in the 72 Constitution that is going to have to be remedied. One last point, and that is, someone might say, well, why not just do a constitutional amendment? And the problem with that is that the Montana Supreme Court has made constitutional amendments since the late 90s extremely difficult to qualify. And so you can't really patch up all the defects in the 72 Constitution with an amendment or amendments.
And without jumping ahead of your series here, again, you'll find more mountainstatespolicy.org. What are the risks, rewards to calling a state constitutional convention?
Well, there's no risk. I mean, the biggest risk would be you have to pay the delegates, because the delegates are limited to considering what amendments or what new constitution they want to propose, proposing it to the voters, and the voters can vote it up or vote it down. If the voters vote it down, nothing changes. The convention itself has only the power to propose. In fact, back in 1972, this was an issue actually before the Montana Supreme Court. The 72 convention tried to do some things that were arguably outside of its power to propose, and the Montana Supreme Court quite properly said, no, you can't do that. You're limited to simply proposing. So there's no risk at all other than the comparatively minor expense of operating the convention itself. But the upside is enormous. The upside could be a much better constitution and one where the government is much more responsive to the people.
The Professor Rob Nadelson making his return to Voices of Montana. Pretty significant constitutional cases, turbulence maybe nationally, at home here as well. The Supreme Court weighing this case, Trump versus Slaughter, that could redefine the limits of presidential authority over these so-called independent federal agencies. We talked a bit about a pivotal decision in 2030. Does Montana convene a constitutional convention? You'll find his writings on open primaries in the law, and it's a Law and Liberty article. I want maybe get to that. And also judicial reform. I want to save some time for that, Rob, as the state of Montana has been attempting to look at ways to, you know, inform, I think, the populace about the judiciary more. And it's not an easy road. We've got to take some calls, though. Nancy listening in Roundup. We're at 866-627-5483. Nancy, you're on the air with Rob Nadelson.
Well, hi, Nancy. You. Long time no talk.
Well, it's not my fault. anyway, it's good to speak with you again, and Merry Christmas, Rob, to you and your family, and Tom and Cody, to you and your family, and everyone listening.
Thank you.
I asked you a while back, how secure is our Constitution? And you said very secure. And I'm seeing people like who are not compatible with Western civilization or our nation, our Constitution, or Judeo or Christianity founding, arguing and fighting, and now we have a mayor in New York City who wants to bring international law into play. And I'm worried about the international law idea spreading across our country, threatening our Constitution, and also our state Constitution. Now, as far as the Montana state Constitution, I think it's a great way to educate we Montanans and also the rest of the country. And I know that the executive branch is being greatly criticized and looked at, like Trump is being overbearing and going across the line. So I once again, how secure is our Constitution? And will state constitutions like Montana save us from threats from outsiders like international law? And thank you, sir, and I will listen off air.
Thank you, Nancy. I think when we had this discussion once before about the security of our Constitution, it was in the context of if we hold an Article 5 convention, that is, if we hold a convention of states for proposing an amendment, is the Constitution secure? And I said very secure because the way the safeguards of the Constitution work, no crazy ideas that even if they came out of the convention, which they probably wouldn't, would stand a chance of being ratified. In areas outside, I think there always are threats to the Constitution. I think Nancy is correct that there are strong forces in the United States today that oppose the entire American experiment. They oppose the ideas on which our country is founded. They want what amounts to a totalitarian socialist government. And then there are those folks within the government who take an oath to the U.S. Constitution that don't always honor it. I mean, people who attempt to expand their own power at the expense of constitutional limits. You know, once again, you quote Patrick Henry about eternal vigilance being the price of liberty. This is a battle that's never won and that has to be refought every generation.
Well, we have a chance here maybe to talk about this Article 5 amendment process as well. And we've hit on that a little bit.
When the Constitution was being ratified, many people opposed it, and they were concerned that the federal government would become overreaching or abusive. So defenders of the Constitution pointed out that the Constitutional Convention, had added a provision that allowed the states basically to revise the Constitution whenever they wanted without the interference of the federal government. It would take two-thirds of the states to call a convention to propose an amendment, and then it would take three-quarters of the states to actually ratify it. But ultimately, the states and conventions of the states were the amending powers in the Constitution. What has happened, however, is that for a variety of reasons, we've never used the state-based method for proposing amendments. And as a result, what the opponents of the Constitution predicted has happened. The federal government has metastasized, it's become abusive, it's become dysfunctional, because we've never used this key check and balance. You know, you could imagine what would happen if the president never vetoed a bill, if he never exercised that that check and balance. Well, he'd become a figurehead. That's exactly what's happened in Britain with the king. The king has not issued a veto since Queen Anne did, I think, in 1711. And so ultimately the king or the queen has become a figurehead. If the president never vetoed a bill, never exercised that check, he would become a figurehead. And because the states have never exercised their check through a convention for proposing amendments, they become increasingly, I won't say irrelevant, but of decreasing importance compared to the federal government. So in 2009, I undertook some very serious research into this proposal and concluded that it was widely misunderstood, but it was the idea of proposing amendments through the states was certainly feasible. It could be done today. And anyone curious about the details can go to a website, which I set up, called the Article 5 Information Center. Article 5 Information Center. It tries to provide material on this process that is as unbiased, fair, and complete as possible.
An example of that, I think, exists today in this current case right now before the Supreme Court, Trump versus Slaughter. I think before we run out of time to talk about that, let's throw that in here as well. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Trump versus Slaughter arises out of the changes made in the 20th century to the structure of the federal government. Essentially, during the 20th century, under the influence of progressive ideology, and I'm not talking about modern progressives so much as I am people like Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt, under their ideology, a lot of government responsibilities were effectively taken away from elected officials and offloaded onto appointed officials who were either served for fixed terms, like 7 years, or for life. And one of those agencies created was the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission members serve for 7-year terms. They're appointed by the president, but they can't be removed by the president, even though I think it's pretty clear that they're part of the executive branch. So in 1935, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld this in an opinion written by a progressive-leaning justice, but that 1935 decision is now up for reconsideration and could very well be reversed, because I think that many people, including perhaps the majority of the Supreme Court, have concluded that if you have an elected president at the top of the executive branch who is charged with administering the executive branch and enforcing the law, he's got to be able to remove people in the executive branch. They need to be accountable to him. He's the only elected executive we have. And so this case is about that. Can President Trump remove a member of the Federal Trade Commission before her 7-year term is over? Now, I wrote about this, as you point out, Tom, yesterday in the Epoch Times, mm-hmm. and there are some warning signs. There are some caveats we need to think about as well. But I think ultimately the Supreme Court should reverse this 1935 decision and allow the president, the chief executive, to be an executive.
And we got like about a minute and a half here. You called this that decision constitutionally incoherent, and then fixing that incoherency is not easy.
Oh yeah, the 1935 decision was written by a justice named George Sutherland, and he could indeed be incoherent. This is not the only example. He tried to make the case that the president should not have control over the Federal Trade Commission because it was not an executive branch agency. He called it quasi-judicial and quasi-legislative, whatever the heck that means. In effect, he created a fourth branch of government. And again, it would take us some time to go through all the constitutional reasoning. People can read it for themselves. But the decision, which is called Humphrey's Executive versus United States, ultimately just doesn't make any sense.
And that's something I'm going to pick up on here as we have more time as well, as there were some statements made from Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson that conservatives have felt show quite a leaning toward judicial abuse. I think the judicial branch of our government is probably one of the most misunderstood by the general public as well, but it is as equally as powerful as the other two branches. And so it's we're very fortunate to have Rob Nadelson, original host of this program, Voices of Montana, years ago. Still one of the most acclaimed constitutional scholars in the country. He has actually been cited in Supreme Court cases numerous times as well. And now with the Mountain States Policy Center, and that's mountainstatespolicy.org, still with i2i.org, that's the Independent Institute, of course, constitutionally. And you can find him more elsewhere. It is nadelsonrob.com. That's where he collects most of his writings there, as I understand. And then, as he mentioned, this Article 5 Info Center. It is ArticleVInfoCenter.com is we're talking about the Constitution here. Rob, again, thanks for being here. Skip has been standing by in Hamilton. Skip, thanks. You're on the air with Professor Nadelson.
Oh, thanks, Tom. And it's always wonderful to hear you, Rob. And what happens in an hour when you speak, people should have their notepads out so they can get things straight about history and the timeline and what we're looking at for the future, all that good stuff. I went, and my partner went to, the first Mountain States Policy Center meeting that they had, which was in Missoula. I think it was the first one over here. And those guys were wonderful. And there's actually people in our state government, in our Secretary of State's office, a couple legal eagles there, and another one that's over in the auditor's office, James Brown's office, who follows what the Mountain States has been talking about. And then you started talking about Article 5, and I can remember because I went to a couple of your get-togethers that were just wonderful when you were touring the state with Senator Tom McGillivray. And everybody just learned so much and felt so much better about understanding what's going on. So what I wanted to find out from you is there maybe one particular thing that's the most important item that Mountain States Policy Center is wanting everybody to wrap their brain around? And then secondly, are you going to be able to maybe do another tour that helps people understand in the problems we have today, how Mountain States Policy Center might have some good ideas that they should include in there and filter into their thinking? I'll just leave it at that because you're really good at just taking stuff and expanding on it, teaching us. And thank you so much for coming on, and thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Skip.
I think the tour idea is an excellent one. I had not thought of that. And I will propose that. We'll see if we can make that happen. It would be fun for everybody. As to what the most important priorities are of Mountain States Policy Center, I think that probably people higher in the organization than I would have to answer that. I can tell you what I'll be working on. I'll be working mostly on judicial issues and constitutional issues. Certainly trying to help Montanans decide whether or not they want to vote for a constitutional convention in 2030. I mean, they may decide not to, but whether they do it or not, they should have all the information available for them. I know also that I've been asked to continue to make clear what the amendment procedure is in the U.S. Constitution, and why Montana should sign on to that. I'll be talking about a subject which has always been dear to my heart, and that is constitutional tax limitation. Montanans right now are struggling with property taxes, and I gather from that many Montanans don't think that the legislature made things any better in the last session regarding property taxes. And so I'd like to work to help Montanans come to a solution which might very well involve some kind of limitation on taxes in the Montana Constitution. By the way, the 1889 Constitution, the previous one, had a number of different limitations and requirements that people vote on taxes. They were taken away in the 72 Constitution, and so the question arises, well, maybe we ought to restore some of them. So those are some of the priorities that I'll be working on.
Just to clarify, too, the mention that Skip had about Senator Tom McGillivray and yourself, that was regarding something that I think is very important. They're asking for a convention of states to address this. And as you noted, too, that is very much one of the two processes that is allowed to amend our Constitution. Yep. But it dealt with term limits and a balanced budget. And I think those two things are pretty vital.
Thomas can be confusing for people because in our discussion today, we've been shifting back and forth between the federal and the state constitution. Yep. Of course, the issues I just talked about mostly involve the state constitution. At the federal level, there's a general recognition that we got problems in the federal government. The federal government is dysfunctional. It's sometimes abusive. Many people think that President Trump is doing the best he can to deal with that, but this is beyond any one person. It's the difficulties are structural. And the founders gave us this method that the states can use in order to get a state-proposed constitutional convention, state-proposed constitutional amendment, which then the states would consider for ratifying. The tour that I took in Montana in 2021 with Senator McGillivray was to discuss that process, because a lot of misinformation had been spread throughout Montana and is continuing to be spread throughout Montana to people who don't understand the Constitution, don't understand this process, and basically, I think, raise money by scaring people. And so we wanted to allow Montanans to be able to get a glimpse into how they can help cure the federal government's dysfunction, how that process works, and to ask questions about it. So that was the tour we did in 2021. And based upon what Mountain States has asked me to do, I think I'll be working in that area some more again.
I appreciate the comment about structural difficulties in trying to right maybe a dysfunctional and abusive government. One of those nowadays was not envisioned years ago, and that is the amount of social media and the ability for those with that platform to misguide. And so I asked that question as to how that plays into all these discussions, but I'm throwing it into Montana's attempt, the state legislature's attempt, to create some judicial reform. And it has been, maybe one step sideways and three steps back trying to get something done in that regard.
Yeah, again, we're shifting back down to the state level. Mm-hmm. Montanans are expected to elect judges, and I personally favor continuing to elect judges, but Montanans are also denied the information needed to make decisions regarding judges and judicial candidates. Now, the legislature did take a step forward with that, and again, I'll mention Senator Tom McGillivray of Billings, because he was a principal sponsor of a bill to establish a commission which will review the performance of judges and make their findings available to the public, so the public has something to go on when they decide whom to elect or reelect. We don't know that this commission is going to work perfectly. In some states, the commission has just proven to be a creature of the establishment. But Senator McGillivray drafted this bill carefully in a way to try to prevent that from happening. For one thing, most of the members of the commission are not lawyers, nor should they be, right? Mm-hmm. And there are other ways in which people are denied information. I mean, the current practice of electing judges on nonpartisan lines. Judges are partisan like everybody else. I mean, that's not to say that proper judging is purely political, but the fact is people are entitled to know some of the suppositions that judges bring to their judging, and that means that people are entitled to know what political party, if any, they identify with. Well, in the Montana electoral system, that's not part of the equation, and you've got a number of people going around the state now with a ridiculous initiative to try to write into the Constitution an idea which is basically a lie, which is that the judges don't have any political predispositions. So I do think we need partisan elections in Montana. That if a judge wants to identify with a party and put that party on his or her ballot, the judge can do so, and that provides some guidance for people. So those are two ways in which Montanans can get more information about the judges that they have to vote on.
And there's a case here where people would say the fox is guarding the hen house. If the legislature passes something that's going to limit the judicial authority, the judicial branch can respond to that. And this is where maybe personal biases may exist.
Yeah, this has been particularly and uniquely a problem in Montana. I mean, everybody knows or has heard about judicial activism, judges that exceed their power. But the Montana Supreme Court in particular has taken it to an entire new level. The Montana Supreme Court said that the legislature could not move back the voter registration deadline by one day. The legislature passed a bill changing same-day registration to the day before, so that you could register right up to the day before. Remember, it used to be 30 days or more, and the Supreme Court struck that down. You've got last count something like 56 different lawsuits going on at the same time. Every time the legislature passes something, a group of special interest sued to overcome it because the Montana Supreme Court effectively has invited them to. This is judicial activism to an entirely new level, and it's partly due to the fact that judges are not allowed to run on partisan tickets, and it's partly due to a kind of a general information clogging that goes on in judicial elections. I hope we can open that up. I hope we can provide people with the information they need so that they can elect judges who stick to judging and don't want to second-guess everything the legislature does.
And I'll throw on there, I think there were some personalities involved over that a period of time as well that have exacerbated this situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you've got people involved, there are always personalities. But, you know, Gordon Bennett, who was a judge in Helena for many years, and by the way, he was of a different political persuasion of mine, said something to me which was very persuasive. And that is that a good judge has to move into a particular role. And in that role, he has to the extent possible, put down his political presuppositions or any doubts, any questions he might have outside the evidence, and operate almost like a machine. I didn't say like a machine, but operate something like a machine in a professional way on the evidence before the judge alone. And then come to a decision. It's called moving into a professional role. And anybody who's been a professional knows what I mean by that. You know, there's a professional way of conducting yourself. And I think that, frankly, some of the problems we've had with the Montana Supreme Court has been a failure to stick into their professional role. Judges can do that. Again, judges are affected by their presuppositions. But there is a spectrum here. You know, you could have good judges who are relatively free of it and bad judges who are not. And so Montanans need to have the information necessary to elect the good judges.
Rob Nadelson, again, our special guest. Rob, it just flies by so fast. And we have so much information still to gather and get out there. But one thing I thought was fun to end with here was there's a false claim out there that the U.S. Constitution was derived from the Iroquois Confederacy, and you being a defender of the Constitution had some information on that.
Well, yeah. A few years ago, I got an email from a woman in Montana, I think who lived on the Salish Kootenai Reservation, who said that the local schools were teaching that that a chief inspiration for the U.S. Constitution was the Iroquois Confederacy. Well, according to family repute, I'm part Indian. I think that would be great. So I started investigating it. Basically, there's nothing to it. It's based upon an inaccurate reading of some views of Benjamin Franklin. There's no support for it in the records of the Constitutional. There's no support for it in the records of the Constitutional Convention. There's no support for it in the records of the Confederation Congress. There's no support for it in the records of the ratification of the U.S. Constitution. Iroquois came up once in a while, but mostly in talking about trade, nothing to do with the Constitution. I will say the Iroquois Confederacy is a very interesting topic, and it's certainly worth studying, but it didn't have anything to do with the U.S. Constitution.
Thank you so much. NadelsonRob.com for all those published publications, i2i.org and mountainstatespolicy.org as well. Rob, happy Christmas. See you later.
Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.